It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, this is another kind of dream interview for me because I'm sitting on the beach, kind of just south of Monterey, actually Pacific Grove, with Karen Washington. I've talked to Karen before. Karen's all the way from New York, and I tell you, Karen, you've got people just flocking around you that heard you speak last night, hearing you speak today, and are inspired by your vision and your own journey. And I just watched up and I saw young people that were trying to get guidance from you of how they can help. They want to join your campaign, and I don't even know that you've got a campaign, but they want to join you. That must feel good.
Yes, it does, especially from younger people who are now engaging in food and social issue. And I think what they're trying to do is really understand their power. And I think that's critical. I think for too long, they've been searching about what they can do. What voice can they play in this movement? And so what I try to do is just sort of pick their brain and make them realize that they have the voice and power within themselves. And they just have to act on it instead of keeping it suppressed.
Well, and you have acted on it. You are a farmer. You've got activities going on in the Bronx in New York. And I think I should just point out, because this is more radio than TV, you're African-American. You have spoken out for more involvement in agriculture of people of color. And I would say from the people that are surrounding you, there are all kinds of people, everybody that just saying, how can I help, Karen? You know, whether or not they're in the same community, they don't have to be living in the Bronx, but they can do something that is the directions that you're outlining.
Yes, I think because of this movement around social justice, food justice and food sovereignty, I tell people for so long, I've seen that these words are being co-opted. So many words are being co-opted and people really not doing the work. And so I think when we're talking about this movement, especially around food justice, I try to tell people that in order to do food justice, you have to be active, that it's a transformation in terms of really dealing with the inequities that we see in our food system. And the only way that that can be managed is through action. That means understanding what are the social injustices that are out there, to work on policies around race and gender, work on policies around land, work on policies that prevent people from being self-sufficient and self-reliant, work on policies that prohibit people to understand the historical context of trauma, and then also work on the injustices around power.
Tell me Karen's story. I mean, how you've gotten to this spot where you have these strongly felt beliefs and you have people looking for your guidance and you are involved in farming and you're involved in food programs. But how did you get there? There was a time you weren't connected, I suppose.
Yeah, I think first of all, I had a profession that really helped me look at some of the diet-related diseases that my patients were having. I was a physical therapist in the health food system, and I saw how many of my patients were succumbing to type 2 diabetes, hypertension, obesity, and getting to know them. Their background was that they came from farms. They came from farms, and they would tell me how, you know, their parents and grandparents lived up until they were 90s, and now they now relegated to the so-called food system that have them now eating out of cans and boxes and processed food. And so I started to take a closer look at the food system within my neighborhood where I live, which is a low-income neighborhood, and saw the same sort of food groups that I was seeing in my community, the processed food, the fast food, the junk food, and knew that something had to be done. And I used that sort of involvement. I used my voice in terms of speaking out to the injustices that I started to see around the food system, because I didn't see people like me really talking about it. I would see outside people using terms such as food deserts to talk about my neighborhood, but they didn't live in my neighborhood. So I figured that since I live it, I see it each and every day, that I had to put a voice to it. And so I started to be very outspoken about what I was seeing in my neighborhood.
Did you quit your day job before you started being outspoken?
No, I think it went hand in hand because I had to keep my day job so I could feed my family, put a roof over my head. But I think a lot of us who are activists and or are out there really trying to change the food system, a lot of us are people of color that have 2 and 3 jobs. So it's not about me giving my job because all of a sudden, you know, I had this epiphany that I can do it. I think that while working, really added to the fact that I was seeing a lot of things that were happening in my neighborhood as well.
So what stage did you personally get involved in farming?
I've been farming all my life. For 30 years, starting from my backyard to my community garden, and now farming with my friends upstate in Chester, New York. So it's been an evolution. It just doesn't happen overnight, and I don't think a person gets their voice or their passion overnight.
So in the farm that's upstate, you said, in New York, where they grow vegetables primarily?
Yes, we grow vegetables, we grow herbs, and we grow flowers. Those are the three things that we grow in that. It took time to really find out what our niche was, but those are the three things that we do grow. We try to grow them the best way we can.
Now, do you bring them down into the city and to farmers markets and so forth?
So the food that we grow on our farm is brought down to 2 farmers markets. One we have in Union Square, which is a high-end market, and the other one is the farmers market in the Bronx, the La Familia Verde farmers market, which is a lower income neighborhood, and then we sell to restaurants.
So I'm curious, if you look at the farmers market in the Bronx and Union Square, which is very high-end, all the top chefs go there, how does the food differ? I mean, the food that's being offered in Union Square versus the Bronx, are they getting higher-end?
They're getting the same food that we grow on our farm is the same food that everybody's eating, no matter what their economic status is. And for us, it's about making sure that all food is a right and not a privilege, and that food that is good and local, nutritious, is a right for all and not a privilege for some.
You know, when I go through those markets back east, one thing that strikes me is your carrots are oranger. I don't know. Did you ever notice that? I don't know why, but it just seems like you go to most of the supermarkets and carrots are kind of yellow, but those carrots, especially in the eastern farmer markets, are really dark orange. So you got the farm, but in the community, what involvement do you have with either community gardens and some of the activities in the Bronx?
Yeah, so I still have ties with my community garden because I still live in the Bronx, and my community garden is right across the street. As a matter of fact, 2018, we were able to get a grant from the USDA and put up a high tunnel. So we put up a high tunnel in our community garden. We're now growing serrano peppers as part of a project of the Bronx Hot Sauce. The Bronx Hot Sauce,
Can I get Bronx Hot Sauce online if I want to chase it down?
Yes, make sure you do. Make sure you purchase a bottle of Bronx Hot Sauce. But anyway, really looking at economic development, that's sort of the next stage of what we're trying to do within our community gardens, to think about being self-sufficient and self-reliant and looking at value-added added products in terms of income generating.
What do you have that reaches out to kids? Do you have young people engaged somehow?
Yes, so we have a Garden Sprouts program that we run during the summer for 6 weeks, where we have kids from 6 to 10 years of age. They work in our garden. They learn about growing. We have chickens, so they learn about the integration between chickens.
You get chickens in the Bronx?
Yeah, we have chickens in the Bronx, believe it or not, yes. And so we run this program so that kids understand where their food comes from and not rely on the fact that it comes from a grocery store.
Have you seen any of these that have gone through that experience now and that have tried to stay engaged as they went on to college or got jobs, or that they found some way to stay connected with food after those experiences?
Definitely. So we have a program now called the New York School of Urban Agriculture, called Farm School, where people who have been doing community garden work, backyard garden work, now can take a curriculum where they can work, where they can learn some of the nuances besides just growing food, but learning about food and social justice was really, really important. Learning about season extension, learning about pest management, a lot of things that typically you don't learn within your community gardens because it's more hands-on, but this is more educational, which is really, really neat and what people ask for.
And how would you describe the diversity in your community?
Well, the Bronx is mostly, I would say, 70% Puerto Rican, or Latino descent, and then about 30% African-American and maybe 1% white in my particular neighborhood and in the Bronx. The Bronx is predominantly a Latino community.
You know, you talk about creating more opportunities for people of color. Do you go to too many farm meetings as I have across the country, and it's about as white as can be? You really encourage people to step up, get involved in farming, and try to promote getting more people involved. And I've heard you say that part of the key, the reason that you're even here, somebody asked you. And I assume you're applying the same thing to those that are saying, how do we get our industry, our organization more diversified? Somebody's got to ask them, I guess.
Right. Make yourself feel uncomfortable to be comfortable to ask somebody that doesn't look like you to come join into the conversation. That's hard to do.
That's missed out on by so many people, is that part of the prerequisite is you got to feel uncomfortable first.
Correct.
Like, I feel awkward as hell, but I'm going to go on over and talk to this person and ask them this particular question. I guess the other thing I just want to kind of wrap up to is that you have, when you talk about people helping a community, you kind of say, well, I've had it with soup kitchens. You know, in that, I'm sure you're not saying that, you know, it's good for people to be generous, but when they're just coming in to try to, you know, feed people, it doesn't seem to be as important to you as if they're figuring out how to help them get their own business started or something like that.
Soup kitchens and food pantries are excellent. They're beneficial. However, what I'm finding in my neighborhoods and a lot of neighborhoods like mine and low-income neighborhoods is that they've become a way of living for a lot of people. In my neighborhood, you can go each and every day to get food from a soup kitchen or food pantry. And so what I'm trying to say and what I'm trying to ask them is to find out, why are people there? So say, for instance, if a person is on a line for a soup kitchen or a food pantry because they lost their job, then there should be services within the soup kitchen or food pantry that can help people get jobs. If a person is homeless, then there should be services that can help, or resources that can help people find a home. And that's what I'm trying to say. And it shouldn't be a way of ending or fixing hunger and poverty, because it's a charity system that's not sustainable.
So if somebody is listening to us right now and they're saying, okay, well, in some way, how can I help? What can I do different? I like the world you're describing. I want to see it go faster that direction. But Karen, I just don't know what to do.
So then I ask people to go into communities and also ask people what they want instead of what they need. Because when you ask people what they want, they come from a place of power. When you ask a person what they need, they come from a place of deficit. So there are people out there, and people know who, you know, you'd be surprised. People know who's homeless, who's hungry, who's in need of resources, and that they need to honor their own privilege and go out and ask those people in those communities, in those neighborhoods, exactly, I have resources. What is it that you want instead of what is it that you need?
Wow. Well, listen, thank you so much. And let me just wrap up with one more thing. Are there websites that you would point people towards to either know what you're up to or where are areas that they could learn more about and perhaps be helpful?
Yeah, so our website is risingrootfarm.com. I also work for this organization called Black Urban Growers, and so that's blackurbangrowers.org. We have soulfirefarm.org, which is a great organization, especially for youth. And we have in New York City, again, there's the New York City Community Garden Coalition that really works on garden preservation. So I think those are some organizations that you can start with and get to know me a little bit better.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you are around somebody, young, enthusiastic people that are saying some of the things Karen's saying today, you ought to ask them if they've ever talked to Karen Washington, because I've seen some walking away psyched up and ready to go out and do some good, Karen. So keep up the good work and keep us posted on how we can help spread the word. And thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you for having me on once again. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.